You're listening to the podcast of Eucharist Church in San Francisco, a community of faith seeking to live all of life in reference to Christ. Join us now for this week's message.
Friends, here we still are in our shelters in a pandemic during Holy Week. Yay! I'm not sure how you're doing, but I am a mess. This is in part because I possess a fatal flaw, commonly referred to as extroversion. Lord knows that social distancing is every extrovert's kryptonite. I literally, friends, feel physically achy and sluggish these days, and no, it's not because I've contracted the COVID. I don't think yet, fingers crossed. It's because I need to hear voices and give high fives and say bless you to at least more than one person every day. Although, bless you, Matt. Lately, I've been walking up to my husband, Matt, with arms outstretched like a toddler saying, hug me. And those hugs are keeping me going. But of course, that's just the tip of the iceberg. The last month to adjusting to life in the pandemic has sent me through crazy cycles of feeling fine, to feeling fear, feeling the instinct to fight or flee, and sometimes feeling grief that's so big it takes my breath away. Just 2 days ago, I spent the day working from my front patio, which is just to my left here, soaking in the sunshine and breathing in that wonderful spring jasmine that's in bloom right now. And it felt like an ordinary spring day until I got a text from the East Coast from my parents saying that they wanted to talk about their advanced directives before my mother went to go serve COVID patients at some point in the near future. I know I'm not the only person who's gotten a text like that these days. So maybe for those of you who have or haven't, you can imagine the surge of pride that I felt for my mother doing great work, and the amount of gratitude that they would have, be willing to have this conversation with me, and some of the selfish anger that she would be going into harm's way, and some of the grief as I imagine making that call about her last moments on earth and a life without her or my dad. For that to happen, I wish I could tell you that I immediately turned to Jesus and said, I trust you. But like I said, I'm a mess. And so instead, I gave Jesus the cold shoulder, grabbed a bottle of Trader Joe's Tempranillo, and watched another episode of Tiger King. Yeah, so here we are. And I don't know what you're facing today, but I think it's fair to say that many of the things that we've counted dear are on the line right now. I know some of you are looking at a long road of unemployment ahead. Some of you are looking at your stocks and wondering what your retirement plans are going to look like going forward. Some of you are spending your days waiting by the phone to see how that special person is doing. Others, maybe like me, are feeling sad and don't really know why, maybe feeling a little guilty about it. And some of us, I'll put myself in this category, are washing our hands for 30 seconds because death is scary and death feels really close. In big and little ways, we've lost our connection, our security, our freedom, our dreams. And the only way to process these losses is through grief. And grief is really messy. And maybe not the vibe we'd like to be bringing into this tender time on Maundy Thursday. Wouldn't it be great if we could just push away all the sadness, these big feelings, and just be together, at least for this weekend, and celebrate communion with each other? And I imagine that the apostles may have felt this way a little bit as well when they gathered for dinner that last night. And so if you'll journey with me, I'd like to take some time tonight to imagine that we're with them in that upper room. Will you join me in that? If you'd like to, you can close your eyes. If not, that's fine. But think through your imagination. If you were in that upper room, what do you see? What do you feel? I see 13 men stretched around a table. And I have to imagine that they're exhausted. It had been 3 long years on the road with Yeshua. And while they had some one-on-one time with Jesus, they weren't the only ones drawn to him. Almost every waking hour was spent with crowds of hungry, sick, tired, anxious, misfit people just trying to get close to him. And as the crowds grew, so did the political opposition and the religious surveillance. And they weren't naive as to what this meant. Some of them had grieved personally when they watched their old boss, John the Baptist, get beheaded at one of Herod's parties. And they all had to go into hiding after Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. It had been 3 long years. But then, just the week before, things seemed to take a turn. Word had gotten out about that last Lazarus miracle. When they arrived in Jerusalem, the city received them like a conquering army. People had gotten the message. The Messiah was in town, and they could feel the excitement. And yeah, they had to go into hiding again, and Jesus was being cryptic again. But they couldn't deny it. This was the energy they'd been waiting for. Something big was about to happen. Something like a revolution. And then they got what they'd been craving. A holiday meal in a secluded room with the man and the friends that they loved. Finally. Imagine again. Can you feel their relief as they stretch out around the table? Or their ease as they prepare to pass the unleavened bread and the bitter herbs. Their sense of energy as they tell the story of the birth of their nation out of the hands of an oppressive regime. This is what they've been waiting for. This was their moment. But then Jesus. And isn't it always that way? But then Jesus, their Messiah, stood up, took off his outer garment, wrapped a towel around himself, knelt before them, and took their mud-caked, filth-ridden, callous feet in his hands and began to tenderly wipe them clean. Okay, let's pause. Why is this such a big deal? I think it's intuitive for us that feet are gross and this is a really weird party trick. But why do they respond so strongly? Why in particular does Peter respond so strongly? In a moment, we're going to spend some time watching Peter's reaction. But for now, let's just go back to the context of the supper. For a long time, the disciples had been reading the signs. And leading up to this moment, they were preparing for the Davidic king to take the throne in possibly the next 24 hours. And no one was better at reading those signs than Peter. Matthew's gospel tells us that Peter was the first disciple to identify Jesus as the Messiah, the Son of God. But it was abundantly clear that what Peter meant by Messiah and what Jesus meant by Messiah were at odds. Right after Peter, you know, scored big on this trivia moment, Jesus went on to say that the Messiah would lead him down the way of the cross. And Peter was not having any of this. He quickly pulled Jesus aside and gave him a few pointers on what the Messiah was supposed to do, which did not involve being a loser who died. It involved conquering the oppressors. Jesus couldn't do that if he was going to suffer and die. Jesus responded by calling Peter Satan. He said, "Get behind me, Satan." And so that's where that particular argument ended. But you have to imagine that Peter's expectations for what the Messiah meant, based on everything that he had learned, didn't just end that night. And so in this moment, as Peter is seeing Jesus kneel down as a servant again, this is a big trigger for him. And so let's imagine again with us, what do we see? What do we feel with Peter? Can we see Peter maybe stiffen up a little bit? His heart's beating faster as Jesus gets closer to him, one disciple away, another disciple away. He's tucking his feet under his outer garment just before Jesus reaches him, tightening his throat as he struggles to say, no. No, Jesus, not gonna happen. This is never going to happen. This is not your job, Jesus. And then Jesus looked up at Peter and said, if I don't wash you, you can't be a part of what I'm doing. This is a split second moment of decision for Peter. What's more dear to him, his expectations around his or his relationship with Jesus? We'll see later on in Holy Week that this isn't the only time Peter has to make this decision. But now the stakes are relatively low, and so Peter seems to give off this big laugh and say, well, have it your way, Jesus. You think I need a bath? Sure, wash me from head to toe. Jesus, being good-natured, gets in on it and says, Peter, you took a bath this morning. Besides, I'm not concerned with your hygiene. I'm concerned with your holiness, which, of course, is great news for middle school boys everywhere. But if you're like me, you might be wondering, okay, Jesus, why are you talking about hygiene versus holiness? It feels like a classic non sequitur, which my friend Margaret Fisher, who's on the line, always says, look for these moments. Jesus is getting to the question behind the question, or in this circumstance with Peter, the argument behind that old argument. Jesus is asking him, are you willing to be set apart? Are you willing to be holy as I'm holy? Are you willing to give up everything, your dreams for your future, your standing in this community, your family, your life, if I lead you down that road? Will you follow my lead? And based on Peter's knee-jerk reaction later on to pull a sword and cut off some poor administrative assistant's ear, I wager that Peter probably would have had a hard time really answering that question. Peter didn't want to walk the way of the cross, the way of grief or humiliation. He wanted the revolution. He wanted to be advisor to the conquering king. He wanted to just be okay. Accepting his station as someone who needed to be cared for, or Jesus as someone who was going to suffer, didn't really fit that. Suffering servants got messed up. Peter didn't want the mess. He wanted his expectations. Can you resonate with that? I know I can. If there's anything that can be said for this time in our life, it's that it's a mess. And we're a mess. And honestly, not just in the face of a global pandemic. I don't know about you, but on a daily basis, I'm gripped with fear of my shortcomings and of other people finding out about them, fear that I won't belong, that I'll be powerless to help in the way that I want to. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Most days I'd give just about anything to be okay and not worry about losing all that I hold dear. And that might mean that the rooster would crow 3 times for me as well. What a mess, y'all. I don't usually bring up my deepest, darkest pain points at a dinner party like Jesus is for Peter. And so I can imagine the horror that Peter felt as Jesus looked him in the eye and asked him to grapple with this. But let's note that Jesus is not horrified. He wasn't impatient. He welcomed Peter's pain, misunderstanding, and the messiness in their relationship, and the mess on his feet with open arms during his very last supper. And so, friends, if you hear nothing else, hear this tonight. Our mess doesn't mess up the party. Our mess is an honored guest and a party in which Jesus' grace is the theme. Like Peter, Jesus says to us today, unless you give me your feet, unless you let me sit with you in your pain and your embarrassment, your lost expectations, you can't be a part of what I'm doing. And why? Why is being open about our loss and our mess essential? I think we can look a bit to the Beatitudes, one of Jesus' most famous sermons, to see what he's alluding to here. Here's a quote from the Message version of Matthew 5. He says, arriving at a quiet place, he sat down with his climbing companions and said this, you're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and his rule. You're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one who is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one who is most dear to you. Friends, our loss is an avenue to Jesus. It's an avenue to holiness. When we acknowledge our loss and reach out in our grief, we let go of lesser loves so that we can be embraced by God. And I don't know, for me, this equation does not feel great. It stirs up a little bit of rage because it feels hard, especially right now, when so much feels at stake, when we have the opportunity to lose so much, how could I possibly let go? It's not built into me. And honestly, Jesus, it feels too hard. And that's true, and that's why Jesus kneels before us. Jesus knows that we can't possibly be holy as he is holy on our own. Unless he walks the way of the cross for us, that is. Unless we let him give us the grace of washing us clean before, during, and after all of those moments when we betray our allegiance to him. Jesus isn't offended by our mess. Do you hear that? Jesus isn't offended by the messy ways that we grapple with our grief. So we don't have to hide our sadness, our cynicism, our doubts, our lust, our judgmentalism, our feverish desire to be accepted, our self-hatred, our trauma, or even our toilet paper hoarding tendencies, as awful as they may be. In fact, that's the news of Maundy Thursday, that Jesus is the safest place to take our mess. If we let him, he'll sit with us here. He'll take that grief in his hands and he'll love us with a friendship so holy and good that not even death, when it comes for us, can take our joy away. You may remember that Maundy Thursday, as we just read earlier in the service, is named for the last thing that Jesus said to him during that supper after he washed their feet. Reading again for the Message, he says, do you understand what I've done to you? You address me as teacher and master, and rightly so. That is what I am. So if I, the master and teacher, washed your feet, you must now wash each other's feet. I've laid a pattern down for you. What I've done, you do. I'm only pointing out the obvious. A servant is not ranked better than his master, and an employee doesn't give orders to the employer. If you understand what I'm telling you, act like it and live a blessed life. Then after Judas left, Jesus finishes the thought by saying, let me give you a new command. Love one another. In the same way that I've loved you, you love one another. This is how people will recognize that you are my disciples, when they see the love that you have for each other. Mani means command. Today, we celebrate the new command of Christ, the start of the revolution. And what's the command? Love. And how does revolution's love begin? Love begins when we let Jesus sit with us in our loss, in our mess, and our grief, and graciously wash us clean. Christ's revolution is not a revolution of military might, like Peter wanted, or a revolution of clarity and efficiency, like we might want. It's not a revolution of having our lives perfectly together. It's a revolution of compassion and empathy and slow tenderness. And yes, we are invited to follow suit by sitting with others in their mess. That's how the revolution will continue. But we can't truly sit with others in their shame and messiness until we've experienced the grace that Jesus offers to us. Or to say it like Jesus, unless we let him wash us, we can't be a part of what he's doing. And so tonight, friends, wherever you are, no matter how lonely or afraid or disappointed or disconnected, in the name of Jesus, let's stretch out our feet toward the lover of our souls. Let's let him care for us with a love that's stronger than death. Let's take a moment of silence now to reflect on what God might be saying to us. And I'll close this in prayer. Heavenly Father, give us that mysterious grace that allows us to draw close to you every day, evermore. In your name, amen.
Thank you for listening to the Eucharist Podcast. For more information, you can visit our website at eucharistsf.org.